Hello, I'm Linda von Tilburg for BizNews. South Africa's decision to welcome Russian and Chinese warships into its territorial waters for a naval exercise has been criticized both in the country and outside, especially in the West. And in our virtual studio, we have Peter Fabricius, foreign policy analyst and journalist, to help me look closer at South Africa's foreign policy and its link to Russia and BRICS. Hi, Peter, and welcome.
Hi, Linda. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, we've known each other for a long time, running around Parliament, union buildings.
Yeah, back in what? Dreadful 80s.
Can we start with this joint naval exercise that South Africa is having with Russia and China called, what's it, Operation MOSI? Can South Africa still claim to be neutral if it's allowing warships into its territorial waters?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. To my mind, it's more the timing, of the visit, because South Africa does conduct military exercises, including naval exercises, very much with the West. So they would say, and I mean, some of them have angrily said in response to criticism about this exercise, you never say anything we do when we do a military exercise with the Americans. But, you know, it raises a whole lot of questions. It raises the questions of if you're doing an exercise with a particular navy, it presumes that you envisage yourself doing actual operations at some point. And one wonders what those would be, you know, in the case of these two countries, and particular Russia. So I just think the timing in the middle of a massive kind of invasion and artillery barrage against Ukraine is rather insensitive, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I think South Africans also, the ones who went to Davos, you know, we knew in South Africa, Ukraine seems far and the Russian war seems far. But when you're there, you realize the West is totally fixated on that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them only found out now how serious the West deems this. Is South Africa playing with fire? Because, you know, if you look at our big trading partners, it's the West, it's not Russia.
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, you know, if you talk to Western diplomats here, they kind of shrug their shoulders and say, we don't like it, but we kind of understand that this is South Africa, and then and that South Africa likes to see it as part of its sort of non-aligned policy, its NAM policy. And, you know, and they will always say that we do exercise with the Americans, as I mentioned, and with the Germans and the Europeans generally, the French, whatever. And so, but I think that what they don't realize, as you say, is just how strongly Europe in particular feels about Ukraine at the moment. Look, it's not going to lead to any Western embassy withdrawing the ambassadors or anything like that, I don't think. And if things were to deteriorate further, and as has been mentioned before, the possibility of, like, if Russia were to use nuclear weapons, as it's threatened to do, the whole thing could descend to another level. But as things stand, what bothers me, though, is that investors are probably not being encouraged at a time when, you know, Ramaphosa is desperate for investment. I think some investors probably look at South Africa and say, why would we want to invest in a country that's so friendly with Russia?
Yeah, that might be an issue. And, well, there's the other issue of the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. He's arriving on Monday. Naledi Pandor, who's in the past said the Russians should withdraw their troops from Ukraine. Yeah. Apparently she was rapped on the knuckles for that by Ramaphosa. Would she again tell him, you need to withdraw your troops?
Yeah, I suspect not, precisely because of what you said. I mean, it's not quite clear to what extent that she was wrapped on the knuckles, but certainly Ramaphosa made it clear immediately after that statement that he believed that this war was actually the fault of the West because of, you know, the whole story that the Russians like to trot out about NATO pushing its borders up, you know, its membership up to Russia's boundaries. So I can't see her being that explicit. I mean, the conversation might kind of skirt that in the sense that I think that she would talk about peace. Is there a way for peace? You know, in the past, they've proposed, South Africa has proposed, some kind of neutral panel or something, international elders or whatever. It's a non-starter, but it's, as somebody, an expert that I spoke to this week said, it helps to them to cover themselves to, you know, to pretend that they're actually promoting peace. And, you know, Ramaphosa actually stated right at the beginning after he spoke to Putin that he had been proposed by somebody, didn't say who, as a mediator in this. I mean, South Africa just doesn't really have the kind of clout to make any difference in a conflict this huge and global.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, is that a pipe dream?
South Africa is still, as you know, as well as I do, has still got this kind of fantasy in its mind that because they pulled off this miracle back in, you know, 1990, early 1990s, they can do it again. And I mean, they do sort of export some of their experts, like people like Ralph Mayer and Ramaphosa himself, actually, before he became president, to try and help other countries deal with their conflicts. But this one is just so big and so involved. And one wonders whether Ukraine would really want South Africa to be mediating, because it doesn't really completely trust its neutrality, really.
Yeah, Zelensky has been quite critical of it, the Ukraine president. Yeah,
as has the foreign minister, Kaneva.
Yeah, and you probably heard in diplomatic circles in Pretoria, they're not happy with the stance of Pretoria.
Yeah, no, they're not. The Western embassies are, you know, Africa is a bit of a problem area, kind of a gray area in this war, and which is why we're seeing so much attention being paid to it. One of the reasons, by all sides, you know, the Chinese foreign minister's here, as you say, Lavrov's coming here, he's supposed to be visiting other African countries after South Africa, although Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Moscow has been very quiet about that. And so people see Africa as a bit of a kind of independent constituency to be persuaded, you know. It hasn't declared its allegiance very strongly one way or another. So it remains a bit of a up for grabs kind of part of the world, you know, with some exceptions here and there.
And then there was the issue of the weapons. What was going on there?
Yeah, that was another great mystery. And I mean, that was the main problem about it, that it was all done literally in the dark, figuratively and literally. I mean, that ship arrived, and in the middle of the night, you know, there were people standing on their balconies up at the slopes of Simonstown and observing what was going on as far as they could tell. And clearly there was stuff going on and stuff being taken off. And all that we've been able to establish, and it was never officially confirmed by the SANDF, or Arms Corps for that matter, is that it appears that we were purchasing some ammunition and so on that is used by our special forces. For the most part, our Navy is actually quite aligned to more to Western militaries in terms of the equipment and so on. But when it comes to the special forces, the story goes that we use quite a lot of Russian stuff, you know, maybe light weapons, and this was a load of ammunition. Now, whether anything was going the other way, that was the big unknown, because obviously there was a concern that we were providing. The military experts said they didn't think we had a whole lot we could provide them usefully. There was some talk about drones, because they've been using drones a lot, mostly now Iranian drones, as we know. So yeah, and Tony Medisa, as a defense minister, has obviously decided, to hell with you, you know, we don't have to tell you what we're doing. These are our friends. We will associate with them as we choose. And I think she's been more tough-minded and bloody-minded, really, to put it more directly, than her predecessor on this, you know. She's had a clash with the U.S. ambassador when he raised some issues about South Africa's partiality towards Russia. And So there is, you know, there are signs of some diplomatic wear and tear as a result of this. I mean, as I said, the Americans, I don't think are likely to do anything drastic, like pulling out or anything. But to some degree, what the view has been, I think, in the Western embassies, that we need South Africa on our side. You know, it's an important country, so we can't afford it to alienate it so much that it drifts completely into the Russian camp, Russian-Chinese camp.
Well, South Africa is also chairing BRICS this year.
Yeah.
Would it be under pressure to allow Iran, Venezuela, the other benchmarks of the Western world to join BRICS?
Yeah, that is potentially a problem. You know, I know that South African officials in some ways are quite apprehensive about precisely that issue, which happens to have fallen on their watch, you know, in the year in which we are chairing BRICS. And so we're going to have to manage it. And you can tell that for Russia in particular, also maybe for China, they're trying to shape BRICS into more and more of a sort of support group, you know, right now when both of them are under pressure. I mean, China has also been declared a NATO rival for the first time last year by NATO. So that's pulling them closer together. And so last year after the summit, Venezuela and Iran like pariah states in Western eyes seem to be, you know, for obvious reasons, I suppose, kind of naturally gravitating towards BRICS. That's going to be quite an issue because, you know, South Africa has tried to present BRICS as being, again, quite neutral, not an anti-Western thing, more about just, you know, independence of, you know, of emerging nations, additional sources, almost like a supplement, you know, to other sources of finance. For example, the BRICS New Development Bank, they see as supplementary to, you know, the World Bank and IMF. But if the membership starts going in that direction, that could be an issue.
The other issue, you know, with South Africans, everybody is just talking about load shedding all the time. Well, rightly so.
Yeah.
Should we be worried that they might do some deal again with the Russians on nuclear energy now with Lavrov there and we seeming to be very close to Russia?
Yeah, as you imply, I think Ramaphosa has resisted that. Whenever he meets Putin, Putin asks or reminds him that, are you still interested in our nuclear, you know, power generation? Yeah, and he always says, well, if we can, when we can afford it, we'll think about it.
Expensive option.
That is the issue. That and if Russia were to offer them some incredibly, you know, cost-saving deal, which I don't see Russia being in a very strong position to do either at the moment, actually, considering its own sanctions against Russia, the war costs and so on. So it remains a possibility. But, you know, it's also a long-term solution. But, yeah, they do need to think long-term. They need to think long-term, medium-term, and short-term. Shorter-term, obviously, they need to get renewables up and running as fast as possible. I don't see that as a possibility, but it's not an impossibility.
Well, I think everybody, the West, us, will be watching what South Africa is doing with Russia. Peter Fabricius, thank you so much for speaking to us. Great to see you again.
Sure. Great, thanks. Nice chatting.